All right, so you're knee-deep in law school, right? And you start to realize that all these landmark cases, they're not just some abstract rulings, they're actual stories with real consequences for people. And understanding those consequences, well, that's a huge part of the puzzle.
Absolutely. And the consequences often flow from the court's reasoning. And today we're diving deep into a really foundational case from the Connecticut Supreme Court back in 1967. It's called Richard V. A. Waldman and Sons, Inc. And, it's a big one, especially if you're interested in property law. But even beyond that, it's about understanding like the whole scope of liability.
Richard V. Waldman. I feel like I've come across that before. Is that the one with like the property line mix up or something?
You got it. That's the one. And what's so interesting about this case is that it goes beyond, the typical scenario of someone intentionally trying to deceive someone else in a sale. It digs into the responsibilities that professionals have to make sure the information they give is accurate, even if they're not deliberately trying to mislead anyone.
So it's not about like someone straight up lying to get a better deal.
Exactly. It's a much more subtle issue. And in this deep dive, we're going to kind of untangle this whole thing. What happened, how the court reasoned through it, and why this decision still matters so much today, especially for you guys slogging through law school.
Okay, so let's set the stage here. What was the situation?
All right, so back in 1967, we have David and Ruth Richard. They buy a house from A. Waldman and Sons, which was a property development company.
Okay, so they're buying from a developer. And you'd think, like, a professional developer would have a pretty good grasp on the rules and regs, right?
You would think so, right? And to make sure the Richards felt confident, Waldman and Sons gave them a plot plan, like a map of the property. And this plan showed a 20-foot side yard.
A 20-foot side yard? That sounds pretty substantial. So what was the problem?
Well, after the Richards moved in, they discover something pretty shocking. The house wasn't 20 feet from the property line, not even close. It was more like 1.8 feet away.
Whoa, that's a massive difference. That's not just a little oops, that's a clear violation of zoning laws, right?
Absolutely. So basically, the property didn't meet the zoning requirements, not how they understood it, not how it was kind of, presented in the sales contract. So you can imagine the Richards were, to say the least, not happy.
Yeah, I can imagine. So naturally, they decided to sue. What was their argument?
Yeah, they sued A. Waldman and Sons for damages. Their argument was that the developer had misrepresented a really crucial fact about the property, that it complied with zoning.
And how did the developer respond to that? What was their defense?
Waldman and Sons claimed the misrepresentation, the wrong plot plan and all that, was innocent. They said they didn't intentionally try to mislead the Richards. And this is where things get interesting, legally speaking, because the question becomes, does it matter if the misrepresentation was intentional? Can you still be held responsible for a major factual error, even if it was an honest mistake?
That's a really key question. So what happened? The case went to trial?
Yeah, and the trial court actually sided with the Richards. They said that even though the misrepresentation wasn't intentional, Waldman and Sons was still on the hook for the damages.
So Waldman and Sons appealed, right?
Of course they did. Their main argument on appeal was that, to be liable for misrepresentation, you should have to prove intent to deceive. They felt it was unfair to be held responsible for what they saw as a genuine mistake.
So that brings us to the Connecticut Supreme Court.
Right.
What were the big legal questions they had to figure out?
Okay, so there were two big questions. The first, which had the broader implications, was can you award damages for an innocent misrepresentation? And the second, more specific to this case, was whether the evidence presented at the trial court level was actually enough to justify the damages awarded to the Richards.
And what did the Supreme Court decide?
They said yes to both. They upheld the trial court's decision and basically said, yeah, under certain circumstances, you can absolutely be held liable for innocent misrepresentations. And they agreed the evidence supported the damages awarded.
Wow. So claiming I didn't mean to do it wasn't enough for Waldman and Sons. What was the court's reasoning for that decision?
Well, a big part of it was that A. Waldman and Sons wasn't just some random guy selling a house. They were professional developers. And the court emphasized that because of their professional role, they had like a special means of knowledge about zoning regulations.
Sure.
They're the experts, right? So the court said, look, Waldman and Sons had a professional duty to know this stuff and to double-check the facts.
Makes sense. You expect professionals in any field to have a certain level of expertise, and with that comes responsibility.
Right. The court also pointed out that the Richards had every right to rely on the information Waldman and Sons gave them, particularly that plot plan. They trusted the developer to be accurate, and the court agreed that that trust was reasonable. So that was another key factor in finding the developer liable, even without proving intent.
So the Richards weren't expected to, like, go hire their own surveyor or something to verify everything?
Nope. The court said it was reasonable for them to rely on the developer's expertise and the documents they provided. And get this, one of the justices even compared the misrepresentation to a warranty. Like, it was almost like a contractual promise.
Interesting. So it wasn't just a casual statement. It was something more formal and, like, legally binding.
Exactly. Now let's talk about damages. Waldman and Sons argued, you know, even if there's a zoning violation, the Richards could just get a zoning variance, you know, get permission to keep things as they are. Maybe that would fix it without a huge financial loss.
Yeah, that makes sense from the developer's point of view. If there's a simple solution, maybe the financial impact isn't so bad.
But the court didn't buy it. They said even if a variance was granted, the Richards still didn't get what they were promised, you know, a house with a 20-foot side yard. A variance might let them keep the house as it is, but it wouldn't magically change the property to match what was originally represented. So they upheld the original damages calculation, which is based on the difference in value between the property as it was with the zoning violation and what it would have been worth with the promised 20-foot side yard. They had expert testimony at trial to back that up.
Okay, so putting it all together, what's the rule we can take away from Richard V. Waldman? What's the big lesson for law students?
The main rule from this case is that an innocent misrepresentation can be actionable, meaning you can sue over it if four conditions are met. First, the defendant had a duty to know the truth. Second, they made a significant factual error. Third, the plaintiff reasonably relied on that error. And fourth, the plaintiff suffered damages because of that reliance.
Those four elements, that's a really clear framework. But earlier you said this wasn't like brand new law. Where does this case fit in with, you know, the bigger picture of misrepresentation?
Right, and that's important to remember. The court wasn't inventing some whole new legal concept. They were just applying the existing rules about misrepresentation to this specific situation with professional developers. And I think the key takeaway for law students is how legal duties can come from your professional role, you know, and the specialized knowledge you're supposed to have. Professionals can't just plead ignorance when their job basically requires them to know certain things. They have a duty to verify, to double check. And if they don't do that, well, they can be held liable. Even without meaning to deceive anyone.
So I'm guessing this had a big impact on real estate, right?
Oh, absolutely. The Richard V. Waldman decision really changed things in Connecticut real estate, and it influenced other states too. It made developers more accountable for what they say and gave more protection to home buyers. You know, buyers don't always have to prove deliberate fraud to get compensated if something's wrong with the property.
So summing up for our listeners, the big idea from Richard V. Waldman and Sons is that professionals, like developers, they have to make sure the information they're giving out is accurate, even if they don't intend to mislead anyone. Their expertise creates a duty, an obligation to be right.
Yeah.
And buyers, they're allowed to trust that expertise.
Exactly. And I think it raises a really interesting question. Thinking about this idea of a duty to know, how might that apply in other areas of the law? You know, think about financial advisors, the advice they give to their clients, or environmental consultants, the assessments they make. How does this idea of having special means of knowledge shape legal responsibility in those fields?
That's a great point to ponder. And it really shows how one case can shine a light on these broader legal principles that apply to so many situations. If you're intrigued by this deep dive into Richard V. Waldman, I definitely encourage you to check out some related cases and legal concepts. This is a fundamental case, and really understanding it can help you make sense of so much else in the law.
Definitely. Keep digging, keep asking questions, and keep learning.
Absolutely. And until our next deep dive, thanks for joining us.